Well, hello everyone. Welcome to the meeting about doing great interviews or conducting great interviews. A couple notes while I get ready here, and that is, one, I'm sorry for this look. I've been working outside and it is really hot and humid, so it's hard to look put together when you're trying to spend your days being productive. And I haven't slept a whole lot last night, so it's a little bit chaotic. I told people that were in the pre-show, you know, the normal time when I sew and tell, when I get a couple things stitched up, why I'm doing this slightly early, as well as, you know, that. So if you get here early, you can meet and greet with all of us for a few minutes before the show begins. The other thing is that I have not had time to put the webinar into a PDF form yet, so I don't have it sitting over here to the side. Instead, it's on my computer screen in something called Nimbus. It's equivalent to Evernote. It works very similarly, and I'm just kind of giving it a try to see what its pros and cons are over Evernote and getting things, you know, kind of testing things out and seeing how it works and if it's something tool that I might once put into a list for people. But it is free, I can tell you that. And you get two profiles, like a personal and a work profile, so you can keep things separate. Anyway, enough of Nimbus. We were talking about conducting great interviews. Now, it's hard to tell if you ever see me in real life that I am an introvert. I prefer to be alone when I work. I prefer to be alone in the labs. I prefer to just to not have people in my space talking to me. And thus, when I started to learn to do interviews in high school, aka college for us British people, I was awkward. I thought I was going to be in the editing department. I wouldn't have to talk to anybody. But the head editor for the newspaper thought, I am a really good listener and thus I should be doing interviews. That was pretty awkward for me, let me tell you. So when I got going on the interviews, I had to develop a process. At first, they gave me lists of questions. You know, the basics. I have the, let me see, I've got this book up here that I've been using to make a class for people. You know, you've got this Scholastic Journalism and another one that's relatively new called Getting the Whole Story. And these sorts of books, they're pretty useful for getting some general ideas. But at the same time, they don't really tell you how to listen, how to get a story. And honestly, because I don't really like to talk, if we're one-on-one in a thing and I'm not expected to lead a presentation or a conversation, I'll ask you questions. And then I'll ask follow-up questions. Also, I can avoid talking for the most part because I live in my head and not in everybody else's head. Know what I mean? Welcome to the world of introversion. It gets a bit awkward sometimes. Good for people who like to talk. Really, we are. We're very good for people who like to talk because we keep them going. If anything, just to avoid having to talk to ourselves. Sorry, my neighbor's moving his vehicle around, and I keep thinking, please stay over there. We've got enough visitors lately. The lady just across the hall had a baby, so her family's in and out constantly. But one of the things that I found to be the most useful in doing interviews with professors, whether, you know, fellow students, whether it was a potential person to put in the newspaper or whatever else have you, it was useful to do a bit of pre-research. And this pre-research would mean that you need to know your guest. So you want to observe as much as you can about them. It helps you basically create a conversation with them because then you can start asking them questions and it will help you flow from one point to another. And you don't have to do a whole bunch of spy activities to do this. You just basically sit down and you listen. But this helps you get to know them. For example, if you meet somebody at a business party. Hi, my name is so-and-so. What's your name? And you know, you start with these little things and you say, what department are you in? That, what the answers they give you and how they give them can tell you where they want to go in the conversation. So you can say, what research are you working on lately? What's the most exciting project you've done lately? You need to learn to ask the questions in such a way that can elicit the excitement from them. But then listen and observe to hear what they say and how they say it. Because they're like, oh, well, you know, I basically get into dead holes and I sit there and look at a soil profile. It's just an everyday boring type of job. Obviously, you're not going to ask them to, you know, continue on that way because they might get bored with themselves. Instead, you would say, well, I'm sorry to hear that. What's the more exciting thing that you've been doing recently? You know, this way you can help to flow from one thing to another. You can take it further by finding common ground and creating common ground. Everyone, even those that appear to disagree the most, can find at least one thing they have in common. Even if it's something as innocuous as just both of you being in science or both of you having an appreciation for, you know, the color blue or something of that nature. Once you find something in common, it can help open up the conversation because it helps build trust. So you want to aim for at least finding one thing in common. And then from there, you can work on discussing things around it and moving from there. Now, let's say you have plenty of time before an interview. That's right, Sarah. Plenty of time before an interview. Read their work. Listen to any podcasts or any things that interest you about that type of work, anything that could be tangential to it. And then, of course, list things that are interest to you and your audience, your class, your department. And then come up with natural questions that either go deeper into their work or springboard it into the new adventure that they're trying currently. Generally, when you're doing an interview with somebody for a newspaper or a production of some sort, you know that it's usually because they're trying to sell a book, they're trying to sell something that they just came out with, they're trying to tell people about it. And you can then kind of work into them because then they'll be like, oh yes, I'm here for this purpose. And then it checks off that box for them and makes it more likely so that they're able to come out in the open. But make sure that it can range around a lot, John. You don't want to be linear. You definitely want to be flexible about that. So I know that the last time we talked about how you would go about creating an interview, and this specifically for John, but I'm pretty sure the rest of you have a similar thing, is that he likes to be very linear, A, B, C, D, E, F, whereas when a natural conversation can ebb and flow and then go one direction, come back and move to another direction, or sometimes go this direction, then that direction, this direction, and they go all over the place. And when you're coming up with your questions, you want to be prepared for that flexibility, and you want to be able to find different ways to draw things back to the core points that you've asked them to the interview for or that they have volunteered and made part of their requirements. For me, this often looks like sales, to be honest with you, because most of the people who we do interviews with are wanting their research out there in the public as part of the science communication. We do the infographics, and talking to them about the science project that they're on, they're often telling the world, I am here, I am valuable, this research is valuable. That's often a message that they want to spread. There's nothing wrong with that, but make sure that when you're asking the questions, you keep that in mind and give them an opportunity to share how their research is valuable in their own words. And that will help a great deal to creating a nice, even flow throughout the conversation, but it also it's something that you work on pre-conversation. And notice I'm not using the word interview anymore. It really is a conversation. It's a give and take. Yes, Joel. Well, one of the things that you could do then is actually the next section. So that's a great segue. Joel had asked, how, when the person is sitting in front of you, how do you reduce that awkwardness that people have? Well, you want to greet them as if they're an old friend, warmly. You want to be open with them. Hello, how are you doing? It's been a while. You know, if you know of anything that's going on in the personal life, like how's your wife? Was your child's birthday party? Did it go over well? You know, greet them as if they're part of a family and they're part of your friendship group. So that way they automatically go like, I can be myself here. Another way, another thing that you can do is to chat briefly about like 3 to 5 minutes-ish about their lives. This will also, like, their current life going on right now. It'll help give you information about the state of mind as well. And then you can help them put them at ease as much as possible. For example, say the person that you're interviewing. I had this once. The person that I was interviewing had just come into town on a flight, but they were frazzled because they were running late. Everything was going wrong. And to top it all off, the airport lost their luggage. They were definitely not in the best frame of mind to do the interview. So what I had asked them was, do you want to do this now and just get it off your plate? Or do you want to reschedule for a time when things are a bit crazy? I have these times available while you're in town. And that helps them make a decision that's more in line with something that's going on, because really no one needs that kind of stress. If you can rearrange it, do so if the situation calls for it, because sometimes it's just useful. And keep that in mind, because most people will divulge more information, more stories. They'll feel more of themselves when they're at ease. If they're stressed, the conversation will have an adversarial tone, be slightly combative, and the interviewee will not open up readily. So it's kind of interesting because they almost get into the defensive stage long before whether or not it has anything to do with you. While you're talking about life, think of ways that you can transition from the hi, how you doing, how was your flight, etc., into your first questions. Sometimes this is easy, sometimes it's not exactly a smooth thing, but either way, you want to try to go as smooth as possible instead of just bam, hit a wall and then change your way, because that can be jarring and also put them out of their ease. Any questions so far? I mean, this is going really fast. Oh, so how is the accent? I mean, I'm getting tired and more tired as we're speaking, so I'm hoping it's understandable. It's not getting any deeper, any thicker of an accent as I'm getting more and more sleepy. Yes. Okay. So Bella asks if I have any tips for when I don't know my guest and I haven't done any pre-research, but I just kind of like been thrown into the situation, which has happened, you know, as you're in those, Katie's sick, Grace, could you please take over? Oh shit, type of situations. Once again, I relied on my ability to listen and pick up details. So I would say learn to listen to people and pick up details and learn how to read body language. That way, if you could tell they're feeling at ease or if they're kind of stressed and closed off type of thing. And everything will depend on their culture, not necessarily your culture. For example, I'm a military brat. I went to the military. I'm used to standing with my arms open like this. My shoulders are always open. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm at ease. It just means that I'm here. Whereas usually for me, at ease means that I'm kind of slumped over a little bit and sloppy looking because I don't have to sit ramrod straight trying to get people's attention. And of course, again, that helps you to know a lot about anthropology. So if I were you, I'd just talk to people. That's actually one of the more awkward things as an introvert to say, believe me. But the way that I learned about people was to talk to them and about them and keep an open mind, try to not be judgmental at all, but have, well, you know, you always want to have boundaries, like don't touch me, don't touch my legs, you know, because some people are more friendly and they'll touch your shoulder, or they'll be like, hi, honey, and they'll touch your arm, and or you know, tap your leg when they're like laughing at a joke. And I always have these boundaries of don't touch me. But, you know, it's one of those things where if it's brief and it's obvious that it doesn't mean anything, I can generally overlook it without being too uncomfortable. But that's something that you need to remember when you're talking to people, is to try to keep it professional, keep it cordial in a way, but not standoffish. So it's a fine line and it's an interesting balance to take. But in the end, you can overcome all of it with doing a lot of listening and being open-minded and then asking follow-up questions. Okay, last topic then, the interviewing process. Start with a question and listen carefully. Be prepared to ask open-ended follow-up questions to the guest and tell the story. And that'll help with the awkwardness, especially if you're not the one that's done the pre-research or no pre-research is done in any way, just because you'll be able to listen to what they say. For example, Yasmin, I forgot how to pronounce it properly. If I were to ask you, what is your favorite part of your research? It's very open-ended, and you can talk about what you really enjoy about it freely. Go ahead, answer it. So I know that for the recording's sake, I'm going to say what she said, which is, you know, Yasmin said that she enjoys the long breaks in between. You know, you put the stuff in and then you have to wait a little bit. In those times, she can get things done and it feels like a very productive process. And then you might follow up with, what kind of things do you like to do when you're waiting? These are open-ended. It also helps people grow, because a lot of us scientists have this sort of thing where we start the process, then it says, oh, well, wait while the machine processes. In my case, chemistry, sometimes you're waiting 24 hours. And when you're doing these sort of things, when you're in person, on Skype, listen for when they sound excited and follow up on that. If they're kind of like sound down about it, you may not want to follow up on that simply because it's not something that they're excited about and it won't help them tell their story. But you could say something along the lines of, that doesn't sound like it's very exciting to you. Would you like to tell us why? And that's why being able to listen to tone and body language can really help you out in this. But you can also, I recommend you try to find questions that will lead them deeper into their story or back to the topic in case they get off track. So in my case, I often interview researchers on why they have done a specific research project, what caught their attention about it, what made them go through the 3 to 4 years worth of the process to get there, what was their drive behind it. Did they see anything disappointing? But how did they get beyond that sort of thing? And sometimes they get off topic, and then I can say, that sounds like a fascinating way to help you deal with the lessons that you were learning or the hardships you were coming across in, and bring them right back to the topic. But when you develop a deeper conversation, it develops a lot of more interest in the science communication aspect, because people don't often get to hear the hows and whys us researchers are doing things. And sometimes you might want to ask them more technical questions as well, if it's aimed toward a technical audience. There's nothing wrong with that. The last thing I can recommend is stick to your time limit. Now, nobody likes to have the time wasted. So I often, it's going to sound ridiculous, but I have time cubes that I use. Yes, you can get them on Amazon, but they're kind of expensive on Amazon. I found these at a local electronics store called Fry's Electronics for half the price. So if you see time cubes, I do not recommend Amazon because they're kind of overpriced there. Oops. Okay, it's off again. But, you know, look for at a local electronics store. So what these do is, like, say you want to do speed questioning. You can set it for 7 minutes, tip it, and it counts down, and then it'll beep when it's done. If you want an example, here's a 1 minute thing, and I'll set it off to the side so you can hear what it sounds like. Kind of annoying, actually, but it helps keep things moving along. And if that's something that you want to integrate into some interviewing processes, you're welcome to. But sticking to your time limit will help the whole thing flow more smoothly. There we go. Smoothly, because nobody likes their time being disrespected. People got to do human things like go to the bathroom, eat dinner, things of that nature. So if you say, I would like to speak with you for, say, 20 minutes, make sure you set an alarm for 20 minutes and then stick to your questions. It'll help also for those people who range far and wide to stick to it. I always like to close the interview process, close the interview then with a couple open-ended questions. Is there anything that we didn't get to that you would like the audience to know? Or, see, very annoying alarm, but it works. And that helps both my interviews, phone calls, my ADHD and other things go right on time. I used to use it for these too, but when I'm using my computer, I have a little clock at the top, so much easier. But again, closing the interview with something open-ended that offers them the ability to just add on is useful. So I usually like to come up with a question like, is there anything else that you would like our audience to know about your research, about this specific topic? You know, just, you can phrase it any way you want to. And I find that that's a really nice way to let the researcher finish their story in the way that they want to. You can also then ask the interviewer, if interviewee, if they would like to, like, I usually do this at the beginning off camera, but I like to ask them, you know, if there any way, do you want people to be able to contact you for more information after this interview is done? And then if they've said yes, then at the end of the thing, I will say, you can reach, you know, researcher at, and then give their contact details. And that seems to help them a lot. And it's a great way to close out the interview because people know then it's done, it's ended, and it's time to go. So that is essentially a great interview process because you're helping put them at ease. You're letting them tell their story while getting a story that your audience wants to hear. And that really helps. And you can use these same tips a lot for hiring practices too. It's how I found out that I could do a lot of hiring in a way that feels more natural than, tell me about the last time you failed something and how you overcame it. I mean, hiring is a different beast altogether, but you still need to know about people. You need to know how they interact with the world. We're about to have mail dropped off. The whole reason I stayed home this afternoon. But with all of that, were there any other questions that we had? Thank you, Yasmin. I appreciate that as well. Yasmin had said that it was nice to hear from somebody who's an introvert to be able to do this. So I know, introverts and talking to people, we don't go together, but, you know, 'tis the life. As long as I have tea at an interview, I seem to be human again. And technically, our 30 minutes is up here soon, so FedEx is banging down my door. Think I will end this just a few minutes early. Bid you all adieu and thank you for putting up with the sliding accent that's getting deeper and more atrocious as I'm getting sleepier. Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you, Joel. I will get my patio cleaned off well before they fine us for having things on there. Remember, for those of you that want to know about some of the background things that isn't just the webinar, just the topic at hand, come on in early. We have a tendency to drop by all the time. All right, with that, peace be with you. And I'm going to go clean a patio before I get too tired and stop breaking pots. Ciao. Have great interviews.